immigration, but not open borders. I want legalized prostitution. I want no more drug prohibition. I don't hate the cops. I just mistrust them, like I mistrust all agents of the state. I don't mind private prisons. I just don't trust the justice system that fills them. Free trade is a must and an absolute. Privatization of money. In the Fed, crypto or bust. Less or no state intervention in education. Slowly, allow the free market to correct healthcare. I'm mostly pro-life. Sometimes I wonder if some people shouldn't be allowed to reproduce. I'm mostly pro-Israel. I've never been a fan of Ron Paul, or Rand Paul. I believe war is mass murder, but often it is a necessary evil. I kind of like the Constitution despite its flaws. I trust and respect religious and cultural institutions. Most days I call myself a conservative. Other days, I'm an anarchist, but deep down, I'm a libertarian anarchist. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? That is my litmus test. This is Nick Way, a.k.a. T. Preston, with the Proto Podcast, late night edition here, not to date me. So, this is more of me ranting and raving and kind of giving you a bird's eye view of how I have come to these sort of heterodox views that aren't entirely libertarian, aren't entirely Christian conservative, or even culturally conservative. And some of them might even seem downright, well, to use the American vernacular, liberal. But they are the core of who I am, what I've become over the last 10 years, and particularly how it emerged after the 2016 GOP primary. See, when I last left off, I kind of explored my origin story. How I became the libertarian that you know and love today, if I may assume the title. Some may say I am not a true libertarian. Okay, I'll accept that for now. I'll rep the title either way. But toward the end of that, I kind of gave you my speech of insurgency and why I believed that with the structure of the Libertarian Party as it is, with its very decentralized nature at the state level, that I kind of wanted to start the process of taking over my local party so that I can send the types of people to the Libertarian Party convention and central committee meetings that reflect my values, the values I just laid out in my litmus test. Now let's go back in time again and kind of resume sort of where I left off and give you actually a lot more detail as to why I finally made the switch to, let's call it, small L libertarian in 2016. So, on that fateful night in March, I would imagine, or maybe even April, I'll have to kind of do the research just to figure out when the Indiana primary was in the GOP contest. But it was that night that Ted Cruz conceded to Donald Trump as the only other person who was possibly capable of defeating Donald Trump in the primary. Not that he had much of a chance. And the only person who could mount a surmountable opposition at the party's convention in Cleveland. It was kind of disappointing to watch him drop out, but the writing was on the wall. This, I said to myself, is not the GOP that I will support anymore. I had long since stopped listening to my Pied Pipers on the right on the radio, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, even to a lesser extent, like Mark Levin, because one by one, these pinnacles of conservative thought on the AM-FM dials slowly fell under the spell of Donald Trump and Trumpism as we know it today. MAGAism, as I like to call it. First was Sean Hannity, who during the primaries, I think around the South Carolina primary, mounted a sort of vicious attack on Ted Cruz on the radio, badgering him. It would later be found out that Mr. Hannity is a close personal friend of Donald Trump and has followed him and encouraged him for years to run for public office. Next was Mark Levin. Like me, once he had realized that it was inevitable that Trump was going to become who he was going to become, i.e. the GOP standard bearer, he too fell. And fell with a lot more consistency, and I give him respect, than most hosts who slavishly fell to the altar of MAGAism. He said, fuck it. He's the nominee. What are you gonna do? So, he fell. One host who was still part of the mainstream still remained. That was Glenn Beck. I followed him closely as he hitched his wagon to Cruzism and the conservatism that Cruz represented. He backed him. He went to Iowa. He went to Indiana. He went to all these places to stump for Cruz. You had to stop Trump. His Blaze radio network and television network were almost exclusively anti-Trump. There's a Tommy Lauren fiasco, but that's beside the point. Anyway, so he pushed against the forces of MAGAism, and for that, he's still recovering. He lost his prestige. He was thought of as a fool. So, when the primary came to New Mexico, it was already over. Typically these Western primaries don't give a whole lot of fanfare. There hasn't been a contested convention since 1976 in the GOP. I went after work. I voted for Ted Cruz. And subsequently changed my voter registration here in the state of New Mexico to Libertarian that night. I was going to try to go all in for the Libertarian candidate. Why? First, there was an opportunity to make a statement. If, through our disgust, for those of us, the walking wounded of the Tea Party and conservative movement who left the GOP because MAGAism drummed us out, could muster up enough votes to push the Libertarian Party to a level necessary so that we could get a standard bearer of the Libertarian Party on the same stage as Hillary and Trump, then for the love of all that is holy, we must give it a chance. We must give it the old college try. And so we did. We all figured, gotta go for the Libertarian Party. They're the closest thing to the right that exists. And I've always been a closet libertarian in and out. You know, the war rhetoric kind of wore on me as a veteran, but you know. Yeah, I kind of understood where they were coming from. I mean, there's a whole host of reasons why the Libertarian Party is simpatico with most of my ideological beliefs. So, it's time to go all in. So, I went all in. First, I explored the primary process. Well, how does the primary process in the Libertarian Party work? Well, it was abject chaos. There were different Libertarian Party debates across different conventions and caucuses, and the primaries in the Libertarian Party are different. They're a little anarchic, if I may say so myself, if I may use the word, and it was very, very hard. I mean, it was Daryl Perry, and it was Kevin McCormick. Sorry, I had to do that. And Austin Peterson, John McAfee, Gary Johnson, and, well, you know, Mr. I'm That Libertarian himself, Dr. Feldman. Kind of like that old dude. It's kind of a shame. He passed away. May he rest in peace. And so I started looking at like YouTube videos, and yeah, I think RT had a couple debates, and I think John Stossel had a debate on Fox Business, and I'm just kind of following the candidates. And what was kind of emerging was like kind of a top three, top four, and that was Governor Gary Johnson, who had ran for the nomination before in 2012 and won it. John McAfee, who was a goddamn psychopath, but I think deep down I kind of liked the man because he really lived libertarianism, probably too much libertinism and a lot less libertarianism. Then you had Feldman, Daryl Perry. I think there was Steve Curbell and stuff like that. So I'm just kind of just watching these guys kind of talk and, spit out their platform. But one guy did appeal to me. And to this day, he still does. And a lot of people don't like the fact that I like him, or they don't like the... If maybe they don't necessarily personally don't like the fact that I like him, it's the fact that I still like him. And that was Austin Peterson. Austin Peterson questioned orthodoxy of libertarian belief, which I think doesn't happen nearly as much as it fucking should. He questioned the NAP and its absolutism. Silly. He was good on the Second Amendment. He was good on abortion, because as I've kind of gotten older, I've become much, much more pro-life than I am pro-choice. And he just seemed constitutional. He was a true minarchist. And he was more than willing to mix it up with anyone on any podcast or any platform to challenge the NAP, because the NAP has failings. And I think libertarians don't like when someone points out that one of their tenets, this is why this is kind of a religious, this is kind of religious in the zeal that one like follows libertarianism and preaches it and proselytizes about it. He challenged it. He challenged the NAP. For one, the NAP is very esoteric. It's kind of, they tend to use that and just property rights. It's just kind of just this bludgeon. And it just kind of came across to me. It's just like, it's kind of simplistic. It's a lot more nuanced than that. And I still believe in the Constitution. I mean, because one takes the oath of office when they become an enlisted soldier, airman, sailor. And I believe in the document. I think it's the most libertarian document ever written. And I think, or to the very least, the most libertarian document ever written that's still adhered to, to a certain extent, right? We can all argue about how far we've derived. We've kind of, driven off the beaten path when it comes to like constitutional, rule, by this magic piece of paper. But he just came across as just a good guy. He was one of the producers on, Judge Napolitano's like Freedom Watch, which I thought was a pretty decent show. And he basically challenged Gary Johnson, because Gary Johnson was just going to kind of walk through the primary, because he's an ex-governor, he's a cool cat, people who I know him, who I know here in New Mexico, who know him personally, say the guy, he's a cool guy, stuff like that. Is he an ideological libertarian? No, not at all. But he knows enough of the principles, and he speaks enough of it. But at this point in his career in 2016, he just seemed like kind of a bumbling old grandpa, that stoner uncle, who's cool to hang with and stuff, and kind of disappears out in the woods and for months at a time, then comes back and hangs out for, holidays and begs your mom for money and stuff. And he kind of gives that vibe. And then he got nuked on this kind of John Stossel Fox Business debate with the Nazi cake. And everyone's trying to explain it away. Like, he didn't mean that a Jewish baker would be forced to bake a Nazi cake. Yes, this is essentially what he said. He said this. Now, we could beat around the edges and kind of look at the argument as more nuanced. And I'm just like, no, it wasn't, you know, yeah, yeah, that's trying to be too smart by half, man. You're trying to be too slick. You know, no, you meant the fact that, like, because of the public accommodation, you know, either laws or like social contract or stuff, that's one should be made in the public domain to sell said birthday cake or make to, you know, or to cater a service to a aggrieved group and stuff like that, which is basically slow code, you know, low down, you know, like Morse code for social fucking justice bullshit, which no one was wanting to have in the hardcore libertarian party. But the powers that be, Cato and, you know, various Koch brother affiliated think tanks and Reason slobbed the knob of Johnson. And, you know, by virtue of being a much more well-funded candidate, and the fact that at the 11th hour he brought in a fellow neocon by the name of Bill Weld, who was another former governor from the 90s, Austin Peterson had no chance. He was on Glenn Beck. He was on Dana Lash. He was on these shows. He was fighting a good fight. He was making things happen, and he got kind of close in the first ballot, and in second ballot he lost, and he graciously said, "Okay, I lose," and he threw his weight behind some other vice presidential candidate, and then came another guy who I'd never heard of, who talked my language, and that was Larry Sharp. He came from nowhere. I didn't start really seeing him until like a week, maybe a month. No, I think a couple weeks before the Libertarian Party convention. And this was the nominating convention in 2016. And he almost beat Bill Weld. This last 90s reject that was dragged off the street because he had money and access to donors and brought into the party, who Gary Johnson vouched for, who came in and wasn't, no one knew who the hell he was, and he wasn't terribly libertarian. I mean, yeah, he might, you know, he read some Ayn Rand books and some Hayek in college, and, no, he didn't govern that way. He was for the assault weapons ban. He supported a war in Iraq. He was a Kasich supporter in a GOP primary and stuff. Like, how the hell did he all of a sudden become a libertarian? It was real ugly. It was real disgusting. And then I think from that moment on, when, you know, because I think we all knew that Austin Peterson was kind of a long shot to really win it all. He had ruffled too many feathers. He came off as much as snide and snarky and you know, in kind of, what did Kennedy say? He had a lot of bumper sticker rhetoric and he wasn't nearly as polished as he is today in his Senate run. In his Senate run, he's much more polished than he was before. But because he dared to question the sanctity of the non-aggression principle, to this day, he will never be forgiven by the libertarian intelligentsia, or the what I like to call the high clergy of libertarian anarcho-capitalism in the party. They were just, property rights, they're just as bad as the MAGA types. So he lost. Gary Johnson, having vanquished his enemy, then took his gesture of a replica of George Washington's musket and tossed it in the trash. But like a good trooper, Austin Peterson started a pack and supported Gary Johnson going forward. Larry Sharp did the same thing. These two, that is Johnson Weld, proceeded to run, in my personal opinion, the worst possible campaign. And the fact that they even got 3% of the vote, they should have gotten 5. Easy. Running away. But they were so fucking terrible. They ran such a terrible campaign And then the party elite, as I like to call them, just accepted the mediocrity. And to a lesser extent, I don't fault the anarchists in the party who were like fucking disgusted with it. It was a terrible showing. So here I am. You know, Trump had won. The Libertarian Party didn't get into the debates, and thank fucking God they didn't. Because Johnson was a disaster. He was ill-prepared for almost every interview he was in. And went all social justice on Guy Benson about immigration. Guy Benson is like a moderate. And he's gay. And like the only thing that gets him animated is not war. Not the prison industrial complex. Not the debt. You know, not the lack of freedom and the growing political incorrect, you know, the political incorrect mobs. Not none of that stuff. No. Guy Benson mislabeled undocumented workers or illegal immigrants. And Gary Johnson gets passionate about that. That is why he lost. Well, he lost for a lot of reasons. A lot of structural reasons, right? You know, he did a good thing of taking the debate commission to court and, you know, really pushing that. But he wasn't going to structurally be able to win, and getting into debates was going to be impossible. And so to me, it was a failed and terrible campaign, and it was not a terribly well-run campaign. Just anecdotally talking to people who were in the campaign, particularly at the New Mexico level, of which, of course, he abandoned the New Mexico delegation at convention, and also for just various podcasts and forums. But just how terrible the campaign was run. Because it was run like a terrible campaign. So again, there I am without a party. Or so I thought. And so I sat back. And I looked. And I was like, well, let's make sure this shit doesn't happen again. And we have the future of the party. It's Austin Peterson. Larry Sharp. And, you know, some other up-and-comers that I found truly compelling. There was a local guy here in New Mexico, a guy by the name of Paul McKinney, who was running for city council in his district there in Albuquerque. Just great libertarian in the sense that he's a moral man, a Mormon man, stay-at-home dad, homeschools, wife works, just brilliant when it came to understanding the philosophy of the state. Me and him shared one thing in common, not to mention the fact that we're both vets, but the guy hates government schools just as bad as I do. And he started introducing me around to the party, and I'm forever grateful. And somehow, some way, I became his arm candy on couple of Libertarian Party, local Libertarian Party events, and one thing led to another. Next thing you know, I'm a delegate in the New Mexico State Party, which is not very hard to do. There's only like 100 of us there at the state convention. But that's what put me in contact with Burley Kane, Jason Valancourt, Stephen Despin and his wife, Savannah, and just other libertarians who were not only in the Libertarian Party in various parts around the state, but who were also very much part of the Americans for Prosperity network of organizations, Concerned Veterans for America, the Libra Initiative, all these things. He introduced me to some local celebrities who do in local think tanks that really understand what's going on in the state. And that's when it became much, much more apparent to me that like the battle is at the state level. And that really, honestly, truly, the Libertarian Party of this state is about as conservative as I thought. But I wasn't really willing to co-sign that. And there were certain elements within the party who I more aligned with, but these people seem to be, thought of as not less than reputable individuals, like the Mises Institute, which is something a think tank who I'd read many papers and ebooks from, was thought of as something alt-right. And then I started listening to Christopher Cantwell, and and I just kind of went down this alt-right rabbit hole, right? Because I wanted to understand why, like, these guys were disavowed. I found out very quickly while why Christopher Cantwell was disavowed, right? But Tom Woods, Dave Smith, big up to Jason Stapleton, who really turned me on to a lot of these guys. Mark Clare, Lions of Liberty, and that whole crew, and just listening to different podcasts over and over again, and every day, and different thoughts, different ideas, from the Austro-Libertarian, publications, to the Libertarian Institute with Scott Horton, to, just other things. Even American Enterprise Institute, right, or AEI, Fee, and all those guys. And it's just, I just started getting a real depth and breadth for, like, okay, so libertarianism is more than just this kind of libertine living and stuff like that. There's a philosophy behind it, and there's faith behind it. And I think what really made me this kind of Misesian, anarcho libertarian, right? What would be like a great string of words to put together, right, to describe how my philosophy? It is part conservative, part agorist, a sprinkle of classical liberalism, and just that Misesian, Austrian, libertarian anarchism. Right, but not quite ready to don the ANCAP hat quite yet. So let's just drop the anarchism and put minarchism in its place. Yeah, I think we'll do that. That fits better. But I started formulating my thought, and I believe, like, wait a minute, conservatism is not incompatible with libertarianism. There's some who hate conservatives because conservatives have been caricatured. And I think an excellent book, The Portrayal of the American Right by Rothbard, I think lays it quite simply. But I'm still conservative. I'm willing to, again, rep that label when it comes to social issues, and when it comes to, things of war and peace. And, I start learning, like, the early classical liberals and conservatives, before they became neoconservatives, were pretty anti-war, anti-imperialists. And there's always been these critiques from the right of the state. Something happened in the late 19th century to flip that, because it used to be the left who stood for liberalism and freedom and all this stuff. But something happened along the way where they were co-opted by collectivist elements, and the right, for the most part, which had begun to embrace, like, individualism, found nationalism as their cry, and empire and imperialism. It gets real complicated, right? And I still need to hammer out these thoughts in my head about what the libertarian left and right are. I'm willing to accept a lot of premises of the libertarian left and the libertarian right, but at the very core, I am a Burkean conservative. There is such thing as order. Anarchy without cultural order is chaos. This utilitarian universalism is great in theory when it comes to the individual. But, and I use a big, juicy, jiggling, badunkadunk, but, you can't have true anarchy, no rulers, voluntarism. You can't have it without cultural order. And those cultural norms are just human anthropology, religion, some sort of cultural, tribal, ethnic institution. Human beings always desire collectivism. That collectivism must be encouraged on a voluntary basis, not enforced by the state. Dogma, as bad as dogma was from a religious standpoint, if there was no state coercion behind it, and if it was voluntary, it wasn't always evil. See, Jeff, I was listening to a speech from Jeff Dice, the famous Blood and Soil speech. And if you were a conservative, or if you came from the right to libertarianism, that speech rang true. It was the greatest speech I've ever heard come from an anarchist libertarian, because it didn't negate or dismiss out of hand religion, identity, and culture. It just didn't do it, because I think libertarians, some, not all, ignore culture constantly. And identity, constantly, nationhood, the collective. They forget in all their talk of individualism and the state. They forget that institutions, voluntary, cultural, ethnic, emotional institutions are dreadfully much, much more important than individual liberty. That's right. This is true. It is the human condition. And we often forget about blood and soil. What is the critique of why the Civil War was fought? More than anything else, it was fought by men, young men, brothers, husbands, fathers, to protect their land from the invading forces of the North. Now, was there an underlying racial supremacist thinking behind it? Some. They wanted dominion not only over their blood and soil, but of other human beings. And for that, it was immoral. And for that sin, the entire South was washed with blood, suppressed with occupation for a generation, and subservient to the state in perpetuity. But they didn't fight just so they could keep their slaves. Most people who fought in the Civil War weren't slave owners at all. They fought for their families' blood. They fought for their property, soil. And we forget that. We forget that all the time when we preach a hedonistic, libertine individualism. So when he uttered that, I didn't hear Nazi chants. I didn't see swastikas, bowl cuts, brown shirts. I saw cats growing up in the south side of Chicago dying on those corners because it's their soil. South Central, the LaBarrios of South Central, of LaBarrios of East LA, Brooklyn, whatever. My hometown, my home, the farm I grew up on. That's your soil. It's in the family. That's my blood. And that sort of micro collectivism oftentimes gets ignored to the hedonistic tendencies of libertinism. And we shouldn't forget that. And that's how I came to wear the cap of this conservatarian, this conservative, constitutionalist, messian, libertarian, minarchist hat. It's who I am. It's who I'll always be. Because I've seen war. I've seen suffering. I've raised children, still raising children. And I've seen and read enough human history to know that the only thing more powerful than simply an idea is human bond. And we risk, at our peril, ignoring that in the pursuit of hedonistic, libertine, cultural relativism, and some sort of cosmic social justice. Never relent. Never, ever relent to the leftist attitude that freedom should be absolute. Kirk was right, man. It can't be absolute. Because eventually, you start violating the NAP. Don't hurt people. Don't take their stuff. And you hurt people when you deny them their culture and their identity. You take their stuff when you shit on their culture and tell them to go it away. Throw it away. How evil were we to take away the Native Americans' culture, their identity? We hurt them. We took their stuff. We took their land. We took their culture. And we assimilated it out of them. And maybe that was in the aggregate a good thing. I tend to think that it's antithetical. It's this universalist utilitarianism. Everyone can be the same, but diversity is our strength. These are the contradictions of the cultural Marxists. And don't make no mistake, the fucking term exists because the goddamn term illustrates something that's been happening for almost 100 years. And that's how I came to be the libertarian I am today, man. I mean, what can I say? I'm still, you know, pro peace. I'm still pro, I don't know, free market. I'm still a voluntarist. I'm still an agorist. Shouldn't have to ask permission to make a living. I still believe in the sanctity of life. I still believe in a nap. I still hate the state. So with that said, how libertarian are you? Peace out.